Welcome, everybody, to the latest episode of Security in 45. Today is Wednesday, February 21st. Today's topic is Cisco Talos. And Andres, I've been looking forward to this conversation for many months. The Talos organization is very intriguing. In my simplistic mind, I kind of think of them as like a bunch of like James Bond type people all working together, doing all this cool stuff that we just hear about. You know, kind of the backbone for Cisco's security products, and is what definitely keeps so much of our industry secure, from businesses, the banks, governments, schools, our home networks.
Yeah, and very excited to be here. Actually, do have a few notes. So we know, and for what we know, is that Talos is the largest commercial threat intelligence team in the world. So. If I get any of this wrong, let me know.
One of the largest in the world.
One of the. Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't read that one. And we know it is full of world class data scientists, researchers, analysts, engineers, and you know it's a very very close group. For you know what we've seen so far, so. Main idea of Talos is just to keep us safe from both existing and emerging threats. So that is super exciting to hear about. And the other thing to mention is from a Cisco's perspective, you guys are the underlying security intelligence behind all Cisco security ecosystem. So this is going to be really exciting. You know, it's a you know, we talk about multiple security products here in the show, and just ready to hear more about it, Mike.
Yeah, for me, you know, a security solution is only going to be as good as the intelligence source that it's learning from. Sound security solutions, we need accurate threat identification. We need patches and details about these threats, and we need them before the attack happens on our own network. Now, today, we are super fortunate and excited to have two Talos engineers on the show with us here, Joe Marshall and Martin Lee. Thank you so much for taking the time to be here with us today. We are very excited to have you guys on this conversation. Now, let's kick it off. And Joe, we'll go straight to you here. Maybe I think the audience would love to hear a little introduction about yourself, maybe your background and what you do at Talos.
Yeah, I do want to make an early clarification with what Martin and Andre said. We're one of the largest, but we're for sure the most handsome security researchers in all of the world. We have no peers. We're devastatingly attractive people, all of us. All right. So my background, how did I get started? All that fun stuff. So I've been with Talos 8.5 years now. I originally came from the DoD contractor and power utility space. And I was brought in to build the first hardware reverse engineering team inside of Talos for, you know, taking apart smart meters and other things that you would see on the side of a house or on a truck or on a train. And I would do that for about 3 years, and then I would transition into sort of the current team that I am now, where I get to take that threat research and continue to do threat research to talk to our communities and our constituents and our customers about what it is that we do inside of Talos every single day, which is fight the bad guys. And it's such a vast swath of things. It's not just any one individual thing that it's almost really tough to zero in. For instance, prior to this call, I was talking to a community of interest for transportation security. 2 days ago or a day ago, I should say, I was talking to medical sector. So like there's so many different areas, and all of these are related to like a Cisco account team usually. And so we're there to assist them, make them look smart, and give our customers, constituents, communities, whomever it happens to be that we're speaking to, just, I don't know, a better security vocabulary, understand the threats, you know, and what we're doing to punch those bad guys right in the face. My background and how I got started, you know, it's really weird with cybersecurity. I come from an operations background, so I was an IT guy. I had my MCSE. I was just doing sort of run-of-the-mill sysadmin stuff. And when you do it for a really security conscious organization, you really start to realize you're really a cybersecurity practitioner, even if it's not in your title. So when I would separate from that and I would go on to the more private sector stuff, I was an all but name a cybersecurity professional, and then I just needed to get the title to actually represent that, which I think is that they're basically saying everyone's in cybersecurity, no matter where you are, where you work, personal or professional. We're all in this together. So, yeah, that's about it for me. I kick it over to Martin, who's got a much more interesting background than I do.
Is so I'm in cybersecurity by accident, really through no great design. I started out my career as a human viral geneticist, and then I discovered the early internet. So I thought this is what I'm going to do with my life. So I dropped all ambitions of finding a cure for cancer and stuff like that, and jumped into the world of IT. Rose during the dot-com boom, which was awesome. Crashed during the dot-com crash, and then this job came up writing spam filters, and this was even before spam was a thing. And I thought, well, hang on, this is just a pattern matching thing, and I knew how to do that through my working on virus DNA of how to identify patterns and measure homology. And so I got that job, which is now 21 years ago. Actually, I believe it's 21 years ago this very week, that I started. And then looking at these very, very early cyber attacks, and we started distinguishing between, we were getting lots of sort of normal attacks, and then we'd start getting some really, really rare and very, very interesting ones going against some of our customers. Not all of the customers, only a small subset. And then we're trying to work out, well, you know, what's going on here? Why are we getting all these attacks over here, and we're getting these things that are really, really different over there? And trying to work out, you know, what was happening, who are the bad guys, what it is that they're doing. And then over the years, spending more time at that, you know, how do we work out what's happening in the threat landscape? What kind of attacks are we seeing? Why are we seeing them? How do we detect and block those? And then, most important, talking to customers about what it is that you need to do to protect yourself against these. So I've been now with Cisco for 10 years. I wrote a book. So when I started out in threat intelligence, I didn't even know what I was doing was called cyber threat intelligence. And I tried to find a textbook that would tell me how to do it. Never found what it was that I wanted. So last year, basically, I sat down and I wrote that textbook, the book that I wanted to find when I started out in the domain. And ultimately, that's brought me where I am today. So basically, it's about working out what the bad guys are up to, what are the differences, how the threat landscape is changing, and then making sure that people are aware of that and know how to protect themselves.
Hey, Martin, you've been doing this 21 years, dude. That's crazy. What was Moses like? Was he cool?
Oh yeah, no, he was a great guy. He got some really interesting cyber attacks. I don't know if you've heard about the Burning Bush malware, but wow,
Oh no, that's wild, man.
thought to be a false flag and an insider job, but yeah, awesome. Actually, interestingly, he was the guy, the first guy, the VPN tunnel that who managed to do the parting of the way VPN travel tunnel, so you could just tunnel through contested waters. Awesome guy.
I knew VPNs were an older technology. I knew it. Well, fascinating backgrounds, Martin. I bet you find a lot of similarities between the genetics part and honestly, like threat hunting, like putting pieces of the puzzle together.
Yeah, a lot of I find the similarities a lot in public health. And the analogy that I use, you know, that we're living in another industrial revolution. We're living in the digital revolution, and the same way that the industrial revolution like changed everything through the 18th and 19th centuries and led to all sorts of problems, like cholera and disease and all these things that we didn't have before. The physicians of the time developed models to actually try and map all of these problems and understand what was happening, even though they didn't know the germ theory of disease didn't exist. They didn't know what they were dealing with, but they could analyze it and start piecing together bits of the puzzle to understand what's happening and how do we protect people. And I really feel that we've got to use the same approach now, that in this digital revolution that we're living in, suddenly there's all these advantages from digital technologies, but there's problems as well, such as cyber insecurity and attacks. And really, it's for ourselves and other similar organizations to start piecing those bits together, understanding what's happening, trying to work out where do we need to act in order to stop these problems, and what information can we give to people and organizations to actually protect themselves and make sure they don't come down with a breach or an incursion. But yeah, there's a lot of similarities.
Interesting. And Joe, with the meter, I mean, talk about the ultimate BYOD device. Like, can Cisco ICE detect, like, if you bring a meter on?
I don't know, actually. My inclination is probably not, because they're in a really unique ecosystem for what's called AMI, Advanced Metering Infrastructure. It's more cellular, to be honest. So maybe if a product support specialist could tell me otherwise, I'd be kind of curious about that.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
you know, the question I have is, how much do you pay on power and electricity in your house if you have a hacked one already?
No. So first, I'm legally required to say that I pay all my power bills on time and with the diligence required as a law-abiding citizen of this country. When I first started working for the power company, my mom asked me, she's like, "So that mean you get free power now?" And I went, "No, mom, I still have to pay my power bills. I don't get anything for free. If anything, I'm paying myself now because I pay my power bills." So yeah.
I wrote a whole chapter on ethics in this damn book. I've had people criticize on Amazon reviews that I wasted a chapter writing about ethics. No. Ethics is a key part of cybersecurity. Yeah. We all pay for our electricity and utility bills. Yeah. We use our powers for good. You know, with great power, we have great responsibility.
Now, guys, this is already off to a great start. Andres, I'm loving this episode. Joe, I'll kick this over to you. Can you describe Talos to the audience, maybe those who are not familiar with what you guys generally do and what the organization does?
Yeah, sure. It's a lot. We do a lot. So I need to take you back to hallowed antiquity if I really want to get to the core nugget of what it is we do. So there was a company in the late 90s called SourceFire, and they had written this TCP/IP inspection tool called Snort, invented by a guy named Marty Resch. And a company would sort of form around that core nuclei of this tool called Snort. And they would go on to sell firewalls and intrusion detection and prevention systems. And they would form this core hacker collective called the VRT, the Vulnerability Research Team. And both understanding adversary behaviors and then how their tools and products could protect. Cisco would acquire SourceFire in 2014. So the VRT, which was about a core 50 people, migrated over and we rebranded as Talos. I came in right after the acquisition, and I think I was like number 70 or 80 or something like that of like the people that had been added. And if you take sort of the two separate areas of Talos as they exist now, we're about 450 to 500 people globally. We're on four different continents. You know, we speak well over 30 languages amongst all of us. We keep just about every security specialization you can think of under the sun is something somewhere that we do inside of Cisco Talos, from malware analysis, reverse engineering of hardware, software vulnerabilities, threat intelligence in a more pure sense, like we've got trained linguists or they speak that language as their English as a second language. So they speak their native languages, and they, you know, surf the dark web looking for malicious activity and for any kind of tips that we can get. We've got a small platoon of just data scientists. You know, we ingest about 6 petabytes of threat telemetry a day. So we have to think about how we are able to scrape that data, then automate it to our customers to keep them protected. You know, the old Cisco saying, you know, see once, protect everywhere is kind of like our mantra, because if we see a malicious URL in email, I need to know that our XDR solution is going to catch that, so on and so on. So we work tightly with our engineering folks. There's so much that I'm leaving out, like just to deliver threat intelligence products to our customers. Like, here's a report that we wrote. And I want to note that we're not fee for service. So Martin and myself and the majority of my colleagues were OPEX. We don't bill our time to anything. They want us focused on stopping bad people. So we're given the luxury of and runway, and to Cisco's credit, to be able to go, let's just go find evil and stop it today. Or let's go find evil and then help make everyone smarter and safer about knowing what's going on. I have to say, just me speaking about my past experiences and this crazy career I've had, it's been a privilege to really work here, because you get exposed to things at such a high strata of importance that you're just, sometimes you're flummoxed at just the enormity of the impact that your organization has, but the growth and the experiences you're going to accrue as a cybersecurity professional are very profound.
Yeah, truly a great cause, the organization as a whole. I mean, just the concept of finding these threats, stopping bad things that are occurring. Amazing. And like you said, see it once, stop it everywhere. So as a general example, seeing malware somewhere and then, I guess, pushing it out so that everybody's protected from that point is a large part of it.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, we're talking about 6 petabytes of data. So we're talking URL dispositions, reputation lookups, we're talking about emails. We're talking about, you know, binaries, malware. We're talking about what I call pre-perimeter. So, like, DNS resolutions, A record resolutions, like Umbrella, our product Umbrella. You know, it's kind of stem to stern and then all the way down to our firewalls where we have IDS or IDP running. So Snort, right? And that permeates where applicable, because not every product uses every security Intel feed ingest, to be able to say and to give what I think the most important thing that any security operations center analyst, any director of a SOC wants, which is context. We stopped the bad thing. Here's why you should care about this bad thing, if you care to know, right? And that context, like tying it to the MITRE ATT&CK framework, we stopped X, this was a pre-reconnaissance or a lateral movement activity. Here's something to help you better understand this threat, is really the core of what it is, because 6 petabytes is a lot of data. Our data lake is massive because we're a very big organization, Cisco and Talos. But I'll give you a story. I was at RSA, 5 years ago, I guess. And our Cisco, I had the pleasure of working in the Cisco booth. So anyone who was coming by would talk about security, but across from us was another vendor's booth, and they had this marquee going around the edge of their booth saying, "We see 1 trillion signals a day." And I was like, A, that's a big number, but B, also, what is a signal? And like, how do you even get to that number, right? Like, did you just pick a number out of a hat? Like, what kind of marketing razzle dazzle did you just sprinkle on that? And the context that I really took away from that was when I went back to think about how we talk about it, numbers are just numbers. It's what I get from, if it's 1 or 1 trillion, if I can't contextually tell you why that matters, then I'm not doing my job. And we're not giving you a quality product. So, so that's just kind of like what we think about a lot inside of Talos, how we interface with our customers and our communities and things like that. I kind of rambled a little bit. You see where I'm going?
Yep.
That was great. That actually, I was thinking about Batman when you said, you know, just be the good guy and find the bad guys and punch them in the face. So I don't know if any of you guys are Marvel or DC Comics fans, just throwing out there.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's what we do, man. I love it.
That's awesome. Awesome. So I do have the next question, and this one's for you, Martin. And it goes a lot with the book and everything that you were just showing to us a few minutes ago. But how does Talos, like, what's the process, if you don't mind going over, how do we detect threats and how do we identify those, if you don't mind going over that?
The key thing to think about it is in this data lake, with all the visibility that we have as part of Cisco across the entire internet, it's really, really difficult for the bad guys to do anything malicious that we don't have a trace of somewhere. We will have somewhere in our telemetry the trace of the bad stuff that they're doing. And really, our game, if you wish, is to find what is actually happening in the threat landscape at the moment that's really important. So we've got loads and loads of bad stuff in our data, traces of bad guys doing bad things. And the question is more, it's not so much finding a needle in a haystack, it's finding a needle in a pile of needles. That we've got all of these traces. The vast, vast majority of these traces are processed automatically. There's no way that we can analyze the data manually. But within all of that bad stuff that we find, the trick really becomes identifying what's different, what's new, what is actually significant that we're seeing now that's different from yesterday or different from last week. And it's that triage of identifying, okay, this thing here is different. And that's the stuff that we'll then pass to an analyst to go and take apart in great detail to really understand what's happening. And then from that, we can look at, okay, what do we need to change in order to detect this better? Do we just need a couple more signatures, or do we need to augment or change our protection in another way? So yeah, it's largely about data analysis. It's about treating large numbers of things automatically and getting the machines to do the heavy work, but then also identifying what's new, what's important, what's special, taking the time to understand that in detail, and then moving that security posture forwards. Actually, one of the things that I hear sometimes, and where I sort of see organizations going wrong, is like they have alerts on their firewall and they come through to their SOC. And then what they're trying to do is resolve every single one of these alerts. And their best analyst is the one that closes the most tickets in a day. And they'll be ever so proud. They're my best analyst. He can close a ticket in 30 seconds. Right? Wow, what a guy, what a guy. And it's like, you know what, you might as well, don't bother. Find the most important alert that you've had today. Spend a week working out what really, really happened here, what's really going on, learn from that, and move your security posture forward so you never ever get that alert again, or you never have to worry about it. It's really not a numbers game. It's about identifying what's important and then responding to that appropriately and moving the security posture forward, making the world a safer place. Most importantly, making our customers safer, which is ultimately what we're about.
The prioritization was one of the questions I had, and you just touched on that, because everyone listening here has huge amounts of you know.
Yeah, we're all just flooded with alerts, with bad stuff, happening. You know, we're up to our necks in bad stuff. Pick one thing, prioritize, find that one thing that's actually the worst thing, or the most important thing, or the most pressing thing. Fix it. Mm-hmm. And then you move forwards a little bit, and it's like you're inching yourself out of that flood of threats, and little by little you can move yourself forward. Ultimately, we've got to make life difficult for the bad guys. You know, most of the bad stuff out there, it isn't that difficult to detect if you've got the right protections in place. You know, make the easy stuff easy. And then the difficult stuff, the stuff that's complex, where we've got a sophisticated threat actor, make life difficult for them. Make them have to work that little bit harder. in the hope that either they'll go and attack your competitors rather than you, because they'll think that you're difficult, whereas maybe your competition are an easier target, and also make it noisy so that you've got a better chance of actually noticing when something is going wrong, when there is an incursion. You know, making it difficult, making it noisy for the bad guys, reducing their return on investment, make it a less profitable activity for them.
I imagine the behavioral base, like you were saying, what's different today than there was yesterday, is that more difficult to detect than something signature based, where it's like, this is the known bad hash, and we're, you know,
if someone's using the same malicious tools time and time and time again without any changing, wonderful. We can just write a signature, and then we can consign those to history. In the real world, it doesn't happen like that. Our best case scenario is they're subtly changing their tools every single time, so it's got a different hash value. So we have to look for indicators within a file, either in the static analysis or the dynamic analysis. So something that a test that we can ask it to distinguish between, is this legitimate or is this illegitimate software? And ultimately, no, none of those tests can give you, well, we're very, very lucky if we find one that says, yes, absolutely, 100%, this is definitely bad, or yes, absolutely, 100%, this is definitely good, which basically becomes a signature. Mostly we're like, yeah, this is more likely to be bad than good, or yeah, kind of looks a bit good, but, and then ultimately, you have to put all of those different tests together and look in the context to then decide, okay, this thing here, we've never seen it before, but all of the tests we've been able to ask it are saying, yeah, it really is looking pretty bad. No single test can give you that response, but many can. And then we can convict that and declare it bad. Life becomes a little bit more difficult when the bad guys are using what's called living off the land binaries. So using the tools, which are an integral part of your operating system to do bad stuff. And that really is where the sport is. How do we detect when someone is using an entirely legitimate tool maliciously? Every time that there are fingerprints, the analogy I use, you know, at the scene of every crime, there are big sticky fingerprints. The same in cybercrime as well. Those fingerprints are there. You just have to look for them. You have to know what they look like, know where you might find it, and know how you show them up. But you know, this is what we do. And if you know how to do it, the fingerprints are there every time.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you, Martin.
I'm learning so much on this one.
I know. Martin, I'm buying your book. After this call, I'm buying the book.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, mate, go for it. It's on Amazon.
Joe, I think it would be interesting to hear if you could walk us through just kind of high level the process, like just so I can have this straight in my mind, from discovering what Martin just said, discovering a threat, to getting something published for that threat on like a Cisco firewall, for example. Like, how does Talos find a threat in the wild and get us through the update patch? And if you have an example of a real threat, that'd be really cool, I think. But I think that'd be interesting to hear.
Yeah, no. So this is both science and an art. We actually, I think last year, maybe the year before, we published the art and science of detecting Cobalt Strike, which is an attack framework that exists, written by one of the most brilliant analysts that I know, a guy named Nick Mavis, who really, really chewed down to the bone the nuances of detecting beaconing and detecting things that our adversaries are going to utilize inside of a network. And first and foremost, the thing that has to happen for like a snort signature or one of our IDS or IDP signatures to work is, well, it has to traverse the network, right? So it has to move non-encrypted across the network, which a lot of stuff does. Then the thing we're going to need is a proof of concept. So what is this bad thing trying to do? So like, is it an SMB based exploit? Is this a stack based buffer overflow that we can catch traversing the network? Is this a weird URI that, you know, is a very, very specific thing that we can key on? And then we have to figure out how we're going to craft the most optimal detection for it. You know, Snort's open source. Anyone can learn Snort. Anyone can write a signature if they want. The levels of finesse and care and quality assurance we put into our detection is unreal. Because A, we're the experts in it, or we invented it. But B, you know, because it's such a popular framework and such a easy to, I think, ingest and use, and there's great documentation for it. You know, we actually spend a lot of our time looking at community rules, and maybe there's something there we could abstract, and maybe there's something we can give them. To say you cannot reverse engineer a snort will learn exactly what the exploit is. It doesn't quite work that way. But it's built upon a community that has shared knowledge over 2.5 decades now, I guess, or 3 decades really. So once we have the proof of concept, then we need to figure out that optimal way to detection. And there's a lot of ways to write detection in Snort, but we want to write the most efficient thing that triggers on the most precise element of that exploit that we're trying to catch going across the wire. And the reason for it is real simple, that you know we're working in a finite state of resources, say for a firewall or whatever's doing that detection. And if it has the inspectors turned on for a specific protocol, and it's doing preprocessor parsing as say HTTP or whatever's traversing across that firewall. Well, we need to be conscious of the resources inside that machine. So if you were to turn on, and I don't ever recommend you do this, if you were to turn on every snort rule we've ever given you inside of our firewalls, congratulations, you've just got a very hot, you know, paperweight inside of you that you've just racked. Because you know it's a fine example of shooting yourself in the foot, but also demonstrating that turning all your inspectors and then looking at every single packet in a gajillion ways is just not efficient. So what you really want to do here is we want to just be the best we can be while you know utilizing the most effective way. And it really is an art. It absolutely is an art. I'll give you a specific example, like you asked for. I was at a conference and a really nasty vulnerability dropped, and I was with one of the guys that I had hired, a brilliant reverse engineer named Jared. And we didn't have much to go on. We knew that it was a thing. We knew the researcher who had announced the vulnerability. But what you typically see in this space is people will announce the bad thing and then give you no technical or forensic details around it. And you're like, I can't do anything without forensic details, right? Well, we found a presentation this guy gave, and he didn't list the entire attack chain, but he did list the hex string he used to exploit this device. I found it on like a Slido competitor from like 5 years prior. I took that string out, that hex string, I gave it to my guy. He was actually able to write a Python environment and script it where that hex string would then pass across the wire unencrypted, and then we would get a snort rule written for that. That would, if anyone attempted to exploit that, it was a Siemens PLC, a programmable logic controller. We're actually able to catch that, but to do that, find it, quasi-weaponize it so we can detect it, was just the ridiculous layers of reverse engineering we had to do to be able to craft that and to detect it. Good detection, mind you. We were working completely, and that's just an example of what an analyst, they might be given an absolute rotten potato of a proof of concept and very little to data to go off of, and they'll have to figure out how to recreate that, get that into an environment, and then test the heck out of it. If it's going to false positive a lot, so it's going to trigger on legitimate traffic, it just might not be a good signature, and we're going to have to bin it. We can't keep it, right? So we have to think about like how do we do all of these things in the most sane way. We don't err always on the side of detection because we have to think about our customers, the customer experience, and are they getting the best possible product for our detection every single time they enable a signature? Yeah.
That was crazy. A lot of detail on that one.
Interesting. Yes.
Yeah. Actually, hold on. I have my notes here. So that was crazy detail. I just want to say that, you know, the process that goes behind it, I think, doesn't get talked too much about, and that was really good. I appreciate the level of detail. I know we the people that come to our webinar is highly technical, and they're, you know, this is something that they will appreciate as well.
It's wild, the example, just finding that hex string, and what you said it was from like five years ago on some PowerPoint slide, man.
Dude, we got so lucky that I found that because I looked at it and I'm like, this is Greek to me. And the guy that I brought with me for this conference looks at me and goes, I think I can do this. And because we hire just some smart hackers inside of Talos, he had that thing literally in a Python script simulating network traffic and a signature written within an hour. And I'm like, that was one of those hires when I hired the guy. I'm like, high five, Joe. You did a
He's
good
like,
job.
yes, yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, yeah, this was awesome. But we just got very lucky. Because like a good example would be like, let's say, the manufacturer of this meter. Who made this meter? I'm trying to remember. I don't want to out anybody. Landis+Gyr. All right. It's Landis+Gyr makes this meter. Let's say a bad vulnerability, a 0 day, something really nasty drops. They're not going to give you the complete forensic details, but they will say, you should probably go patch your device because this is bad, right? That doesn't help us in Talos because we need technical specificity to make sure our customers, our communities, our open source communities, and our customers are protected, right? So, like, there's sometimes you're just going to catch an L and you're going to be like, I without any details, I can't do this. We do have information sharing agreements, all enshrined legally in NDAs. It lets us swap information with others to make sure that we can get the technical details. Sometimes you just strike out, right? There's no guarantees you're going to find that information, and it can be pretty frustrating, unfortunately. But that's basically how it kind of works. Yeah.
That was
Fascinating.
awesome. Yeah. And I'm gonna jump right into another question that I have right here. And this one's for you, Martin. Incident response, this is in the minds of all our customers and everybody that is in the show. And more likely into, the reactive scenarios. What are let's say for example, quick example about, what do we see in incident response, reactive services? What do we do from the Talos perspective? And if you don't mind talking a little bit about that would be awesome.
The Talos Incident Response Retainer is basically where the customers buy a certain number of our analysts' hours, and you can save up these hours for a rainy day when you have an incident, when you have an emergency. The trick, really, and I'll bypass your question a little bit. The best thing that can happen is that you don't ever have an incident. And what you can do is you can use these hours for our proactive services, where you can talk to our analysts, who will help you or test your systems to make sure that you're in a very, very good position and you're less likely to experience an incident. If you do experience an incident, you've got those hours on hand that you can use to talk with our analysts. They can take charge of the incident because for the customers who experience the incident, ideally, this should be a once in a career event. You're having a breach, having something go wrong. This is going to happen to you once in your career. For our analysts, for our incident response analysts, this is what we do every day of the year. So our analysts know exactly what to do, exactly how to respond, exactly where to find the bad guy, exactly how to kick them out. So for the reactive services, you call on the help of our analysts. They will come in, they'll resolve the incident, find where the bad guy is, kick them out, tell you what happened, and then also harden the system so the bad guy can't come in. We're used to working with any kind of environment. I mean, it would be lovely if everyone bought only Cisco gear. The reality is no, people are buying from other vendors. But that's absolutely fine. We're used to working in these heterogeneous environments where there's all sorts of tools, all sorts of systems for all sorts of different vendors. We'll come in, sort, resolve the situation, identify what's happened, kick the bad guy out, and remediate your systems, and then harden them so the bad guy doesn't come back. This is what our responsive services are all about. But I think, I mean, to anyone on the call, really the ones to look for are the proactive services. You want to minimize the number of emergencies you have, and you can use the hours that you're buying for the retainer for those proactive services, which is going to make those emergencies less likely.
That's awesome. That's good. I mean, we see customers all every day, Mike, right? That they, yep. They have questions about this. This really helps understand of, what really is that we're talking
That's so true about the proactive services, Martin. Like, you can prevent getting to the point of the emergency. Like I said, that's great. Let's definitely, and I guess, Martin, would that be like some of the tabletop exercises and
Absolutely. Yeah, the tabletop. So working through what a bad guy's likely to do and how you would respond to that. We can also check your playbooks. So the procedures that you have ready for a bad day, how are you going to detect if there's a breach? The bad guy's not necessarily going to tell you. How are you going to detect if there's a breach or you have an incursion? What are you going to do when that happens? How do you respond? What other groups do you need to involve? For our incident response analysts, this is what they do. They've seen it all. So they can help the customers. It might really help to say, actually, do you know what? These incident response procedures that you got here, this is as good as it gets. You guys are doing really, really well. Or working through it and say, okay, all of your coordination is built around email. This is great. What happens if the bad guy hits your email server and you can no longer send and receive email? Do you have a backup? What else are you going to do? This is the kind of scenarios that we've come across. We can use that knowledge of real world examples, helping the customers, working it through, improving their posture. I think a very good way to think of it is like the fire service. If you've got a fire actually happening now in your office, of course, yeah, you're gonna call the fire service. They're gonna rush around. They're gonna put the fire out. What you really want to do is talk to your fire prevention services before then, and start talking about, do you have the fire extinguishers? Where are the fire extinguishers? Have you tested them? Are they suitable fire extinguishers for all the stuff that you're working with? Do you have a fire alarm? Do you practice? Do you have rehearsals? Do you have a smoke detector? It's these questions that actually you want to resolve early, so that if there is an incident, one, you're detecting it early. You're also responding early, so you're minimizing the consequences, so that then when you are bringing in that response bit, it's not a major problem and everything's on fire and nobody knows what to do. It's like, okay, we've got a problem, but we think we've contained it and we think that we're on top of this. So much in any form of engineering, it's about thinking, what can possibly go wrong? How can I minimize the chances of this happening and then minimize the consequences if it does happen? And really, this is what our incident response services are all about.
Excellent. And I know it's got to save so much more money investing in some fire extinguishers, talking to the fire safety team as opposed to rebuilding your office, paying for all the fire truck service. So great point there, Martin.
Yeah, and rehearse. Have those rehearsals so that when a bad day happens, and it does happen, it will happen, everyone knows what to do. And it's just, yeah, we practiced this, we practiced this last month, we practiced this 6 months ago. And it's just a simple something that you go through. Everyone knows what to do. Everyone knows how to respond. And it just becomes, something that, something didn't want to happen, but we dealt with it. Rather than, oh my God, this is an absolute disaster. Everything's falling down. We don't know what to do.
Yeah, great. So let's see, Andres, what do we got here? I can talk with you guys all day. This is awesome. We got one more question for each of you. Maybe we'll have time for the dad jokes, one or two. We'll see. Joe, maybe quickly for the audience listening in, this is all very fascinating and we're talking about fingerprints and being proactive versus reactive as possible. What do you guys in Talos see as some of the most common ways our customers are getting attacked? Is there any low-hanging fruit? Someone in the audience listening, like, I need to be a little more invest in my own security. Any high-level recommendations about what you guys see would be a good place to start?
Tough question, actually, because the threat risk model is different for personal versus corporate, right? So if you're sort of in a, you know, if you're a professional, if you're a security practitioner in that corporate environment, there's a number of ways. Phishing is always going to be great, primarily because it's cheap. The adversaries can do it, spend fractions of a penny, blast out emails. Someone will open the email and click something they should not. If it's dumb and it works, it is not dumb. What I kind of see, there's a pivot there. They're going more to QR code-based attacks into those emails. And we can detect the QR codes, but there's evasion tactics around that as well. Because what if I access it on my mobile device? How do I protect myself yet again? So the threat vectors are always changing from a corporate way. So like with phishing, but also like we have unpatched, unmanaged devices on my perimeter. And, you know, I've got a firewall I haven't patched in 3 years. Well, an adversary, a nation state can exploit that to gain a foothold and then pivot, either intercept traffic or pivot deeper into your network and do damage, right? And whether you're a nation state or what I call like, you know, crimeware or commodity based, like ransomware attacks or a cartel, like these things truly don't change because they're going to throw the kitchen sink at you to find a way to get in. What might change is the level of noise they want to make once they're inside of your network. I would say those are two of the most common ways, high level, what we see, and I could drill down into both, but I'm not going to for the time. I will say this, like if we want to talk about low hanging fruit and sort of tacking on to what Martin was saying earlier about our incident response stuff that we do is 30% of all our emergency response cases. Like, so something's on fire and we're coming to help you put out, the victim did not have MFA solutions installed. So having a multi-factor authentication solution, both personally and from a professional perspective, is absolutely invaluable. Having a password manager, a password vault, I'm like 1Pass, LastPass, I don't care who you use, is also an A-plus way to protect yourself. Don't reuse your passwords because data breaches are multiplicative. If I get breached here, I can reuse those credentials perhaps somewhere else and create more damage for you or attack your environment, your corporate environment. So like those two things to me are low hanging fruit, low investment dollars, high return on value, that I would highly recommend, to help prevent and mitigate some of those attacks. But of course there's no panacea. There's no silver bullet. Yeah.
Great. Read our year in review report. This is where we talk about everything that we see. We talk about the vulnerabilities. We talk about the attack techniques. Yeah, read our reports. This is where we talk about this.
And the vulnerability reports, Mark, those would be posted at, on the
Talos. So yeah, on our blog, so blog.talosintelligence.com. Read the year in review report and also the quarterly threat reports that we make. This is exactly what we do and what we talk about.
Great. Well, you heard it, folks. That's a good place to spend some dollars to have that high return on security. So the MFA and then a simple password manager. You said roughly 30%. Great. Thank you.
Yeah, and we'll make sure we update on the page
when we're going to list all that for sure.
That's great. I think I do have the last question for you, Martin. And this one's going to be super simple, I hope. Where can we learn more about Talos Intelligence?
So www.talosintelligence.com is the simple answer. On our blog, which you'll find a tab on the website, or just go to blog.talosintelligence.com. This is where we publish everything that we think that you need to know. So we've got our various reports. We've got our newsletter, which is a very, very good place to start. Some of the reports go into more detail than others. Some stuff is sort of written for an audience of security researchers, but very simply, the year in review and the quarterly reports and the newsletter are the places to start. But everything that we think you need to know is published on our blog.
Excellent.
That's awesome.
Now, those last two questions went kind of quick. We're a little bit over, but do you guys want to run through the dad joke contest?
Hey, yeah, let's go through the dad jokes.
Come at me, bro.
I'm so happy to hear that, Marcus. Some of these are pretty good. So what we'll do is I'll just start it at 90 seconds here. You each are going to get asked four Valentine's Day specific dad jokes. Just see if you can come up with the correct answer. If you say skip, we can always come back to it. Let's see. Andres, I think you're asking to Martin first.
Let's do it.
I'll start it. When it gets about 10 seconds, I'll say 10. All right. Ready, set, go.
All right. So I go first.
Go ahead.
I'm already eating your time. So here's the one. If the letters Q and T were dating, what would be their celebrity name?
Okay, what I would do, I would have a good hard talk with T because everyone knows you've got to mind your P's and Q's.
No point for that one,
That was great. Oh, love it.
Let's do the next one. This one is, we thought it was super fun. How did the telephone propose to his girlfriend?
So initially my thoughts are like it's something to do with like rotary dial action and finger strength, but I think we probably don't want to go there. So I would imagine it's more to do with could it be giving her a ring?
That was good. That's actually the answer.
Yes.
Killing
All right.
it. Still
And
got 30 seconds.
the answer for the previous one was cutie. All right, the next one. What did the paper clip say to the magnet?
Okay, this is another red flag for dating because magnets are attracted to anything ferrous. They are never going to be faithful to you. A magnet is not going to be a faithful partner. And if you do get into that relationship, it's going to be very, very difficult to pull it apart. They're very clingy. Never date a magnet.
That's actually the answer. All right, the next one. What did one cat say to the other cat on Valentine's Day?
I can't believe that Mew forgot again.
No, close. Said you're perfect.
No, it would be definitely you've forgotten again.
These are awesome.
All
That
right,
was
two of
great.
four, I guess.
I would give Martin extra points for coming up with the P's and Q's and then the meow one. Oh my gosh, that is great. I'm trying not to turn red over here laughing. All right. Joe, are you ready?
I suck at these. Come at me, man. Let's just
Okay.
rip the band-aid off, shall we?
Here we go. Time has started now. What did the dark closet say to the light bulb?
How much is this power bill going to cost me? I don't know. I've got nothing.
All right, we can skip that. We'll come back to it. What is Cupid's favorite rock band?
Heart?
Good one. That's not it, but that would count. That's amazing. What did the puzzle say on Valentine's Day?
You complete me?
Got it. Knock knock.
Ah! What's that?
Knock knock.
Oh, you're thankful this is a PG. Who's there?
Olive.
I hate olives.
You gotta say
It's
olive who?
olive who?
Olive who? Sorry.
And then could you complete the rest?
I love Olive who? I don't know. I don't know about that
Oh,
one.
Joe, olive you, olive who too?
Okay, there you go. You got it. So with a little help from a friend, you got it. Let's go quickly back to the first one. What did the dark closet say to the light bulb? You still got 15 seconds.
Turn me on and I'll come out of the closet.
Yeah, light me up. I don't know. I got
There you go.
nothing.
You light up my world. Ding, ding,
I
ding.
was, I
Well
was,
done, guys. Well
I
done.
was, I was, I, oh, my brain just shut down.
That was good. You guys got more than I would have. And when we were coming up with these questions, we were like, we know these guys are going to be smart. You know, we knew you guys were going to do a great job. So, Well, that was fun. I'm glad we got those in. Andres, how about we summarize this and let's close it out.
Let's do it. Let's do it. I know we went a little bit over, so we're gonna fly through this quick section on the summary. So a few things that stuck in my mind and I'm thinking about, you know, is understand what Talos is doing as an organization. What do they do? How they help our customers and how they help us also. Just, you know, understanding how we detect threats, a lot of information right now in the Talos blog. I see, you know, there's a lot of information, indications of compromise. Any tool that you're using for threat hunting, it's gonna leverage that information as well. We learn also the discovery and publishing for new rules. That was actually awesome. That you know, I probably have to go back and recheck some of that information. And you know, we're here to fight the good fight. I know, you know, that's one of the things that Talos says a lot. So that's my takeaway, I guess.
Right. For me, the proactive security and the reactive security, huge components. Martin, you were talking about investing in things like a bad day is going to happen. Let's try and fine-tune that as much as we can and prepare for it.
Stop making the bad day worse.
Yes. And then that reactive portion of it too. Hey, when that bad day does happen, we can step in and help incident response as an example, as opposed to those tabletop exercises for the proactive. Joe, you covered that low-hanging fruit. You know, you talked about the MFA, and then the simple password managers, like cost-effective ways to decrease the chances of us being attacked. And then, Martin, what is the website again?
So blog.talosintelligence.com.
Okay, great. And then I know you guys and Talos have the Beers with Talos podcast, which is super cool, as well as Talos Takes. Andres and I are huge promoters of what you guys do for the good in the world. So thank you for having jobs that are so meaningful to the point that you're truly out stopping bad guys and keeping us all safe. So, and of course, thank you so much for your time on the show, Joe and Martin. Andres, our next call, March 19th. We're going to be talking about a brand new Cisco security solution called Secure Access. That's a SASE solution, which is meshing security with connectivity. I have thoroughly enjoyed today's show. It's something I've been looking forward to a long time, Martin, Joe. I hope everybody else out there enjoyed this show as much as we have. We will see everyone on the next show. Have a fantastic day, Martin, Joe. Thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for having
Cheers,
us.
guys.
Take care.